Did he?
Yes, sir.
He has? I guess so.
I think somebody left the flower there for you.
You have Malcolm.
You're all ready to go.
Okay, fine. Oh, isn't that nice? Well, this morning, we're going to start with the subject of stress. Now, in matters of stress and tension, we generally assign stress as outside causes, tension as inside causes. In other words, the conditions of the world can cause a lot of stress. Conditions of your private life can result in a great deal of tension. And in all cases, the problems, the dispositions, the sicknesses, unhappinesses, are due to the failure of the individual to handle the problems and responsibilities of existence. Actually, no one is doing it perfectly, and no one will for a long time to come. But the condition can be improved so that many persons who are now very unhappy can find a considerable amount of peace and security if they will understand the problems that they face and how to handle them. And stress problems coming from outside, we have hundreds of possible causes. Stress can be political, sociological, economic. It can result from world changes, wars, plagues, earthquakes, tidal waves, and innumerable disasters. Stress can also be fear of external changes that could be unfortunate or fatal to the security of the individual. Stress is always the danger lurking somewhere in the dark, lurching there, waiting to be heard from, waiting to come forth and participate in our affairs. So this morning I want to try to explain a little bit about the matter of stress. This universe that we live in is a perfectly balanced instrument. We will never develop on this planet anything that even resembles what nature has already established. We are in the most miraculous type of existence. We are in an existence that is infallible, inevitable, immutable. We are in an existence that has only one ultimate good, the perfection of all that lives. We can try every means that we know. We can make every mistake, consciously or unconsciously. And yet, in the course of time, the inevitable course of our lives is towards the fulfillment of the divine plan. This plan is that all shall survive, that all shall perfect and release the potentials within them, and all shall move forward through the mysteries of cosmic evolution. There is no doubt that for the majority of people, this evolutionary process is adequate. There are a great many who are not worrying about it at all. There are a great many who are not worrying about world affairs, or are not worrying about a job. A great many people just don't worry. They can be impoverished, they can be sick, still they do not worry. There are others who almost always have what they need, but are afraid. Afraid of loss of that which they do not have, the loss of that which they do have, or the coming of something that they do not want, that they might have. So in all these different processes, there is a great interchange of values. Now, how do we determine the basic nature of these values? In the first place, as far as the human being is concerned, he is given an adequate natural defense for nearly anything that can happen to him. This defense is his magnetic field. The magnetic field of the human being, like the shell of the hen's egg, provides all that is necessary for the fulfillment of the purpose for which it's created. The individual's cosmic nature provides him with a sheltering vehicle, a body of energies, a magnetic field, by means of which that which is wrong is largely avoided, that which is right is strengthened. The magnetic field, of course, depends for its security upon the fact that the person lives in harmony with the laws of his own life. To have a healthy magnetic field, the individual must be mentally, morally, and physically healthy. He must deserve it. He must have built it through understanding and insight, and also through discipline and understanding and the improvement of his inner functions. Yet if he has an inner magnetic body that is reasonably accurate, right, reasonably sufficient for him, he will find that it will protect him against most of the dangers of the environment. He will not suffer unduly from world changes, because his own inner life has already explained to him why these changes are necessary. The wiser the individual becomes, the less shock and stress there is in life. The less hope there is, the less security. The less fear there is, the more security. And the individual with strong faith has solutions that the unbeliever does not have and cannot have until he changes his own nature. Therefore, we say there is a magnetic field, an aura, a kind of cosmic egg in which we live. This has been described by many ancient writers. It was known in the times of Pythagoras and Plato. It was understood that the individual lived in a globe of light, and that this globe of light was his strength in time of trouble. It was something that he could take refuge in, behind, and with. And as long as his own nature was correct, this globe of light was a shield of armament protecting him against the problems of life. If he was too ambitious, then the magnetic field would not cover all of his ambition, and that would mean that he would be given a lesson in order to learn that he was overdoing something. If he was too afraid, he would be given means of encouraging his development of moral strength. If he was brought up in an ignorant environment, this inner life of his own would help him to turn to study and self-improvement. The purpose of that which is within this auric field is to protect, unfold, and perfect the inner life of the person, that which is within that field and within that body. So part of this physical field is the physical body itself, with all its functions and all its various manifestations. We are gradually learning to appreciate the power of the mind, the power of resolution, the strength of meditation, and all kinds of mystical disciplines to help to perfect and integrate the physical body. We have arts and sciences now to strengthen it. We have diets and methods of preventing unnecessary ailments. We can lengthen its life considerably, because this body is protected by being within the egg, within this field. And in this field, nature has supplied it with a variety of protections that are utterly unbelievable. We have no concept whatever of the defense mechanisms that have been set up within ourselves. Mechanisms that will meet the most incredible emergencies. And they will continue to meet the emergencies until the individual fails from inside. The magnetic field of the human body is never breached, it is betrayed. If it is betrayed from within, then it is helpless. But as long as we defend it in its integrities, it will protect us over the periods of life. Now, in the face of the stress angle, we find that this auric field is a defense against outside things. It is a defense against worries, because it has a large magnetic field of mental energies which will help us to understand, accept, and transmute worries and anxieties. It has emotional courage within it. Therefore, it will help us to survive fear or pain or any of those things which arise in the conflicts of life. There's all kinds of hopes and aspirations in it, because there is room in that field for all hope and all ideal and all dreams that we may ever have. We are loaded with potential at all times, but we dilute this potential by failing to fulfill its needs, by failing to live up to its potential meaning for ourselves. Now, we look around us in society as it is today, and we see a human race living very largely on compromises. We find that the human being is not living up to potential. It is not carrying on the work for which it was intended. It is not building a nobler mansion for its soul. It is simply drifting along, hoping for the best, and trying to forget its responsibilities by means of false pleasures and various bad habits. There is no reason, therefore, why this field can work properly with man. It will work with those who are right. Among mystics and those in some religions, where idealism is very strong, the mysteries of the psychic life are still strong. The magnetic field of the body is still strong. But there are many areas where we have completely diluted it, where it is not present at all. There is nothing whatever in ourselves to prevent us from taking that drink. There is nothing inside of ourselves that says no and means no when tempted to take narcotics. There is no power within ourselves unless we have disciplined it. And this magnetic field in which we live, upon which we depend so much, is disciplined by our own conduct. It gradually becomes strong enough to meet the emergencies of life. That is the way it was built. It's done on purpose, so that the individual, growing up and passing through the various emergencies of life, would develop resources sufficient to protect him through all of them. Now, what are some of these resources? Faith is one. Faith is perhaps the most powerful of all. Faith is the conviction that there is a reason for life, and that reason is right, and that the individual can attain the security through a practice consistent with integrity. There is no doubt in the world that many people live that way, trying their very best to be their very best. And for them, the magnetic field is a very powerful armor. It is what Christian calls the armor of righteousness in the old little fable, where the individual's virtues are his shields and his bucklers against the sorrows and terrors of the time. The stronger his inner life, the less power the world has to control or defeat him. Now, we may have a tendency to think that to be a victim of the world is highly desirable, because if we surrender to the world, we can have wealth, we can have power and fame, we can do all kinds of things that we want to do, we can nourish the appetites, and we can become a slave to the delinquencies which we have come to regard as symbols of freedom or symbols of maturity. Actually, all these things are fabrications of distorted thinking. The individual who is not keeping the rules will never be kept by the rules. And the individual who breaks the rules will be broken by the rules. So that in every sense where the individual compromises his principles in order to gratify his sensory perceptions, he's in trouble. Now, in the course of time, this trouble builds up. We have now, for instance, quite a large population on Earth. And this population is almost all troubled. Nearly every individual has difficulties. He has difficulties as a citizen, as a parent, as a husband, wife, child. He has difficulties in work, in education, and he has all kinds of pressures upon him, tempting him to compromise his principles or even cultivate them in a way that will be injurious to himself in time to come. So that the person has all these evidences of unfinished business. And when you multiply this unfinished business process by 6 or 7 billion people, you realize that you have a tremendous strength there. But it is a strength of complete weakness. It is a strength that has no carrying power whatever. It is a strength against which not even one virtuous thought can be destroyed. Actually, no matter what the individual's mistakes are, they may be legion. And there may be legions having them. But this does not interfere with the integrity of a single person or the victory of a single conviction in this world. We have taken it for granted that we are saved in groups. Some in groups by the religions we hold, some by groups according to social thoughts, some by political groups, some by atheism, some by almost every type of belief, in which beliefs that form into groups or sects or clans have some particular strength. A clan that is wrong is just as weak as an individual that is wrong. And the faith that is not right will have to be corrected just as surely as though it had never existed. Everywhere, in everything we do, value, realities, and integrities are absolutely imperative. So we find today a great stress in the world. We find people suffering every day from every type of problem you can think of. And we can't help but feel that these poor people are really having a hard time. They are. They're having a very hard time. And for some of them, this hard time is difficult to explain. Only infinite wisdom and its own infinite love can understand it. But there's a great deal of this hard time, probably 9/10 of it, that is easily understandable and obvious and easily recompensed or corrected if we take the proper courses of action. Most people who are wrong know it. They may not admit it. But the individual who is immoral or dishonest is aware of this fact. He is aware of the fact he is breaking rules. But he is not aware of the fact that these rules exist finally to break him. He believes he can get away with it. He sees others get away with it. And on this he builds a philosophy of escape mechanism. He will make the same mistakes that all others make who were carried away to the graveyard and have an expensive funeral. He's going to be one of those who's going to be remembered by a marble monument. He's going to be loved and admired by his friends and sanctified after his death. And if he lives long enough, he'll probably be in public office. All these things are considered to be the proof that he was right. Now, he may not occupy the highest possible office in the world and still be wrong. And he may be the king and emperor of the earth. But he will be in no way able to escape the same laws that guard and guide the development not only of at least of humans, but practically all the lesser kingdoms of nature. He can no more break the laws of life than a rabbit can. And wherever he tries to break the rules settle down quietly to break him. Now, it's a little difficult with the human being because he is more complicated. Therefore, breaking him takes a little time and thought. But nature has the time, and the universe has the thought. Actually, we find that the first mistake he makes it almost necessary to make a second one. He was wrong in the first place, but he got to prove he was right, so he makes a second mistake. Or he gradually adds up one wrongdoing upon another, protectively, defensively. And after a while, he is up to his neck in his own compromises and his own corruptions. And he will go on, and maybe they won't catch him. But now it moves into another field. It moves from the field of the stress symptom. It moves into the pressure symptom within himself. So on his deathbed, he remembers some of these things, finds a wish that he was different, and goes out of this world fully aware in his inner life that he's taking with him the unfinished business of years, that he has been wrong from the beginning. And he got out of this world without anyone finding it out, he hopes. But it does not mean that he will not face it forever or until he cures it himself. In nature, the integrities are absolute. And in human nature, these integrities must likewise be absolute on their own levels, levels not possible for the human being to apply. So we have the person who is stress-laden. He has a great deal of stress. He's worried. He has pains here and there. He has made a number of serious mistakes. He has not kept good habits. We find that he is maybe 50, 50, 60 years old. He is a physical wreck. He is a victim of alcohol or tobacco or narcotics or one thing or another. And he is going along on the grounds that those are perfect privileges that he has. If the individual wants to drink a quart of scotch, who can stop him? His common sense can't, and his clergyman probably won't try. But actually, from the beginning, he knows what was wrong. Something inside of himself can never be silenced completely. And on two or three occasions, I've been present on deathbed scenes that were pretty pathetic. individuals who through a lifetime bluffed it through, allowed never anyone to think there's anything wrong with them. We're always right in every decision. We're always correct and look forward to the ultimate glory of the world to come. When those last dogs in this world broke down like little children, weeping their hearts out and crying for mercy. The individual is never unaware of his own mistakes, but he carefully covers these mistakes so that the awareness does not reach him until something happens that takes away most of the reward for the mistake itself. So we have the stress symbol that carries through. We have a stress for wrong ideology. When a person goes into a game like politics, if he goes in with wrong motives from the beginning, the stress from those wrong motives will go with him to the grave. And in one way or another, he will always be wrong. He will always be punished for being wrong. So, in stress, the individual on the outside is tempted. From the inside, he must resist if this temptation is wrong. In stress, he may be in high office, but at the same time be tempted to make a serious compromise of ethics. If he makes a serious compromise, he is then open to the problem of stress. And stress means that that pattern is going to remain until he lives it out, till he corrects it, till he realizes sufficiently that he was wrong to make sure that he never does it again. So we inherit a little kind of protective genius with us when we come into this world. We inherit with us a kind of good barrier, as they call the gnome, or nature spirit, or genius, as they called them in the ancient times. Everyone is born with a little angel and a little devil with them. There's all kinds of legends about the group spirits and the nature spirits and so forth. And there are the good spirit and there's the bad spirit. And the good spirit is forever luring us forward to do something better. And the bad spirit says, well, heaven won't notice this small mistake if I do make it. There is no escaping any of it. So that is a great handicap. Imagine not being able to get away with your iniquities. Very, very discouraging. The individual was quite sure that no one would know that he stole the inheritance. No one would ever know it anyway. Somebody would know it, somebody did know it, and that somebody was himself. And someday that self is going to stand up and convict him in the court of universal law. And it's going to convert him for his own good and not to punish him for what he did. It is going to prove to him why he has broken rules that will break him unless he makes the necessary corrections. So we are here to outgrow our own shortcomings. We are here to come to the realization that being in this world is a privilege, that it is an opportunity presented by nature to give us the chance to grow, the chance to increase from a little quiet child like a little hen in the egg coming out of an egg, just to live for a little while. Rather, it gives us a hope of an eternal existence, growing greater and wiser, more loving and more serving all through the futures that lie ahead. The individual that comes to individuality now, or did so in the past, is going to be an individual from now on. And as an individual is to be responsible for its own conduct from now on. It is going to be responsible for growth from now on. For it cannot stand still and let the world move by. The individual who stands still and can't change is in one kind of stress, because the world will change and leave him, and the leaving him will leave him in pain. He must therefore meet the changes that do come. There are times when what appears to be a constructive mood or a constructive character should be rewarded. But if it is a birth out of time, if it is wrong in its relationship to its environment, there is still trouble. Therefore, we have a lot of things we have to learn in order to understand these matters. Every individual who wants to improve himself must understand himself. He must understand physiology. He must understand anatomy and medicine. He must understand universal law and astronomy. He must understand art and music. And most of all, he must understand those intimate human relationships which are the basis of home and family, and the perpetuation of the species. For this perpetuation is part of the wisdom of the Most High. So we live as an opportunity to grow. And our life is for the purpose of increasing our cooperation with all the laws and principles of existence. We start comparatively humbly, but there is also a great joy simply in the experience of increasing the beauty of life. The individual who works all day long very hard and finally maybe has a little family, and out of this little family comes a baby. And this baby is the first experience of motherhood or fatherhood that this family has known. Up to that time, it has always been a struggle for survival. But somehow with this miracle that has occurred, there is a new dimension. And if these people are proper people, if they are reasonable and intelligent people, here will be the beginning of a new life, a life that is fuller and richer and has much more to justify its existence. All the way along, the whole purpose of growth is to unfold painlessly the tremendous internal resource that each one of us has. This internal resource has been built up through hundreds of lives and thousands of parts of space. It has been built up from grains of sand, and it will be built up from comets and constellations. But the whole world is a great garden, and we are all little flowers growing in it, or little seeds in flowers, or little hopes in seeds. We are all here because of infinite growth. If we help that growth, we will be happy growing every day. If we insist, however, that all growth is suspended to serve our selfishness, then we are in real trouble. We are not to be picked upon by a jealous deity, but we are not to be catered to by one that sides for us against truth. We are going to find religion a great help, but we're never going to take a faith that makes it easier for us to live badly. We are never going to follow any philosophy that leads to selfishness or the misuse of resources. We are never going to side with any procedure that is unfair to the stranger and to the person who is of less understanding than ourselves. All of this is to do with a stress factor. So we watch. And on Monday, the bills come in. And the bills are a little bigger than we expected to be. There's a worry. But what does this worry do? Does it send us out to borrow money at 10%? There's the trouble there. It might tell us to make our purchases live within our means. And where there is great need and great problem, to get assistance or help wherever possible. With a definite resolve. Never to gain this added funds by some corrupt means. That we will learn to improve some, we will go and learn a new trade. We will become skillful in some new work. We will grow to meet our needs. Never try to steal our way to security. Everywhere we are, a growth of all kinds is a permanent investment. The individual who takes two music lessons will remember that he had two music lessons, even in an age millions of years in the future. Well, two music lessons will never die, because he will always have them. They're a little step in the right direction. But two cases of selfishness and foreclosing a mortgage, he will also always have, but it'll hurt him to the bitter end. All these things mean we've got to clean the slate. We've got to make the slate contain only that which is good. And if it is only that which is good, then little by little, the good on that slate will grow. And little by little, our state and society will improve accordingly. So all stress has as its purpose the getting the rough edges off of people. The stress means that the person is being tempted. If he falls for the temptation, he has failed it. If he lives through it, he has succeeded. But every day he is tempted again, and every day he must stand strong again. Now, this does not mean that these temptations will every day be miserable things. He is not going to wake up every morning with a dismal process to face. But he will find that with the good and the bad, the friendly and the friendless, the helpful and the helpless, every day there will be a little opportunity to be better than he was before. There will be a new gift, a new grace, a new experience of brotherhood, a new expression of human or divine affection. And these will be the crowning moments of that day. In the moment in which the kind word that he gives brings somebody out of sorrow, that is the big moment of that day. That is the part of that day that goes into eternity and becomes part of the tremendous background of pressures and forces which make up life. Now, as all these different problems come along, if we say no when we should say yes, if we carefully avoid taking on a responsibility, if we don't return the book we borrowed, or anything of that nature, then in some way we have lost something. We have lost an experience of integrity. And life is an experience of integrity. And the more of that we get, the less pain we will ever suffer from space. There will no longer be this terrible worry over stress. The stress is nothing more or less the unfinished business, usually returning to the individual who has already denied the right to receive it. It is the possibility of a person who has not accepted the challenge on some other level. And all these different levels have to be faced. And until the individual accepts the responsibility for the problem he himself created, there will be no end to the constant nagging of circumstance. One of the most common problems that we have in this type of problem is disposition. And dispositions are very difficult things. Now, usually dispositions are internal, so we would put them with stress rather than we would put them with some of the other emotions. But the disposition is there. Now, a person with a bad disposition is going to have trouble always. There will always be tension. There will always be misunderstandings. There will always be antagonisms. The individual who has an enemy is in trouble, maybe for 1,000 years till he gets over it. But there's no getting over an enemy without trouble, because the person must make a friend out of that enemy, because they cannot have any enemies in space. In space, there is nothing in the end but love. Everything else is an illusion. So to get that attitude and to experience it means you have to step by step get over the antagonism that you may consider perfectly justifiable. Surely this relative was unkind to you. Surely this married partner cheated you out of your inheritance. Surely your children walked out and left you. All these things are things that happen to us. But the individual who is the victim must in inward life get over that hurt through the mystery of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the individual declaring before his own inner life that he has given up a negative attitude, that he's given up a criticism. And if whatever happens, if this person who has injured him comes to him for help, he will help generously and immediately and without question. So there we have another effort. We have people who are in trouble for help and need it. We have neglected people. We have all kinds of individuals who have had their homes broken by maliciousness. We have a great deal of marital infidelity at the present time, which is due to several possible causes, the most common of which is lack of integrity. And in these processes, everyone is satisfied to hope that a new arrangement will be successful. But as long as any marital disabilities go unsolved, they will come back again. And even though it may be many lives, there will be no end to a problem until it is made perfect in the law. And then it has brought its message and brought it fully, and that message has been generously and completely accepted. Now we go with health problems in the same way. We have health problems for most people. Some people have health problems by inheritance. This means they're bringing it forward from some previous time. There may be others that are having it now. There are others that seem to be getting away with it now, but will have it later. The health problems are all of some one kind. They all represent the struggle between the individual and the rules of the body in which he lives. The first detail and duty of the person in the body is to protect that body, to give it all it needs, to give it only what it needs, to secure it in every way possible, but never burden it with the attitudes and responsibilities of false thinking. It is like a political situation. The mayor of the city is the person in the body. The mayor of the city wants to use the body to advance his political purposes and have a good time. That's that. Then there will be corruption in the city. And when the individual uses the body merely to gratify his sensory perceptions, there will be corruptions in the body. Everything is either right or wrong. There's no halfway measures. There's almost right or almost wrong. There's always the struggle of the right to succeed and the definite determination of the individual to try to get away with the wrong. And he never gets away with it. And all around us every day are the sorrows of these problems. We look around us today in the world, look at the conditions of society. There's hardly a day goes by when we don't have another war. These wars are strife over political issues. All of these wars go back to selfishness. All go back to stupidity, avarice. All go back to the misused power and definite efforts of individuals to destroy the rights and privileges of other human beings. Enslavement. Now, enslavement may be a little thing and it may be a big thing. Enslavement may be underpaying the one man who works for you. Enslavement may be the captivity of a nation or a continent. But all these things are wrong, and where they are wrong, they must succeed. They must exceed the power of right. And where they are excessive, they must fail. The time must come for the truth to come out. All slavery must end. All tyranny must end. And the use of the privileges of state, all of the clergy, all of the professions, to exploit the poor, all these things must end. The use of all profit problems are very definitely indicated. The stress arising from financial investments and misinvestments, this is very definite at the present time. And nearly all of it is dishonorable in some way. Unreasonable salaries are dishonorable. That one should be rich and another poor, of equal abilities, simply through opportunity or through some exterior privileges. This is wrong. The rights of the poor and the rights of the rich are equal. Each one must do that which is proper. Those who want more must be able to earn more, because they can earn it. There should be no limit upon earning, but there should be all kinds of limitation upon stealing. Wherever an effort is made to accumulate wealth by false means, you have a corruption starting that can go down long enough to destroy an empire. But if it is done properly and each individual works successfully and honestly for that which he believes to be necessary, you will have no more labor revolutions. Everywhere it is the same thing. We have a false motivation, and that principal false motivation is profit. And as long as the motivation of profit is dominant, we're going to have sin, corruption, and death in the world. The corruption of arts and sciences, the corruption of theater, the corruption of music, all of these things trouble us gravely. In a very few years, television has deteriorated into something unbelievably poor. It has ceased to have any meaning except the meaning of profit. And it has also helped to drag down the moral level of millions of people. Well, it will go on. But nature is there. Nature is there constantly working, constantly handing out the records and records that are necessary to even these things out. And in one of these days, we're going to see what happens when a useful discovery is abused, as we've done with television. We are now on the verge of doing the same thing with computers. We're going to use everything wrong until we learn to use it right. And everything that is used right is used for the common good. And everything that is used wrong is used for private profit. Private profit is only good to the degree that it makes possible for all to share in a reasonable degree of participation. And in building a career, young people growing up, why should we send them to school? Why should we spend $180,000 to send a child to university? Why should we be forced to do all these things in this way, when in reality there seems to be no profit in it? These overeducated people, then we say to ourselves, why are they overestimated and overeducated? Well, one of the things in education that is certainly truthful and obvious is the complete lack of idealism. Now, idealism is built into the fabric of reality from the day that the worlds were formed. The very sky itself, it is drops of idealism falling like rain upon the place beneath. It is a marvelous realization that in the universe there is nothing but lawful love and mutual service. That all good things will be fulfilled because they are of the nature of fulfillment. And creation is of the nature of fulfillment. The creation is not a struggle forever as to who can control what. Creation is a process by which all learn to control themselves and in so doing share in the common good. So we have this problem. No beliefs, no ideals, no hopes. And we have people who try to teach us that we should not have ideals because they are expensive. We shouldn't believe in honesty because it'll keep us from being rich. But what we don't realize is believing in dishonesty will make us poor forever in this world and any place we go from here. There is no answer to anything that is corrupt. Religion is an essential part of life. It is essential for the individual to believe in something greater than himself. And in that belief, realize that he has been empowered to grow and share that greatness with the greatness which is forever. And then we have all kinds of different things. Sick people, medicine, education. All these things. A world of people now trying to get along without the principles of integrity. Trying to get along without realization of the truth upon which all civilizations must rest. If we look back upon the peoples of the past, we look back upon the Roman Empire of Greece, of India, China, Persia, even upon the empires of our Western Hemisphere, we realize that integrity was the foundation of security. And as integrity failed, the security failed. And that one by one, the civilized nations have died from their own so-called civilization, which was nothing but a corruption of idealism. All civilizations were to be interpreted as ways of getting rich off of somebody else, when actually the real reason for civilizations is it is the privilege of each group to contribute to the growth and well-being of those around it. Civilizations should build more civilizations and not end in empires and corruption. Now, also in health, a little more details of health. We had stressed health at this time. I think one of the reasons that we can think about it is that we're all more or less health conscious. We want to have a better physical existence and to live as well as we can while we are here. Therefore, health means that we must cater to the rules of this thing which we call the body of energies around us. The body of energy, the aura, the magnetic field. This is the place where all these organs are. Within the magnetic field are all the vital organs of the body, all the endocrine and glandular structures of the body, all of the nervous systems, the muscular systems, all of the processes of mentation and propagation are all within this magnetic field.